This episode is brought to you by Dietz and Watson.
Molly, it's time we have the talk about hot dogs.
Okay. Well, hey, I'm looking for a hot dog that's the real deal, Matthew.
Like a classic hot dog that, like, when you think of, like, the platonic ideal of a hot dog, I recommend Dietz and Watson's Dietz dogs.
Ah, well, I've heard that they're handcrafted and made using only Dietz and Watson premium meat.
I can vouch for this because Dietz and Watson sent us a big box of hot dogs and other delights, and wife of the show, Lori, and I had them for dinner last night. We had the classic beef Dietz dogs with toasted buns with sauerkraut and pickled jalapenos and Dietz and Watson ballpark-style yellow mustard.
Do you think you'd recommend Dietz and Watson hot dogs for fried rice?
Oh, yeah. Fried rice with some sliced hot dogs. I'm going to be doing that soon. Wife of the show, Lori, is going to be making the hot dog flour buns from Christina Cho's cookbook, Mooncakes and Milk Bread. Very excited for this.
And I'm especially pleased because Dietz and Watson does things the right way. So this means, like, no additives, no fillers, no artificial flavors, no cutting corners. You can feel good about this stuff.
Dietz and Watson. It's a family thing since 1939.
Shop now at dietzandwatson.com/the right way.
That's Dietz, D-I-E-T-Z, and watson.com/the right way. I'm Matthew.
And I'm Molly.
And this is Spilled Milk, the show where I lift my hand way up in the air and can't
Nobody
put
can
it back
see
down.
It. Were you doing a little stretch? Do you need to do the other side?
Yeah,
now?
I think I need to do the other side, or I'm going to feel like a little twisty all day.
Oh, morning stretches, Spilled Milk.
Listeners, why don't you stretch along with us? This will be like the radio exercise routine that people do in Japan. Which is appropriate because this episode is going to be heavy on Japanese food.
Yes, we are talking today about dipping noodles.
Yeah, and I think I said during a recent episode we should do a dipping noodle episode, but I don't remember what that episode was or why.
Yeah, me neither.
Okay.
Okay. I'm really glad to be doing this because I have heard about dipping noodles from you for a long time. I remember reading in your book, Not One Shrine, your book co-authored with Becky Selengut. I remember reading about skemen. Am I pronouncing that right?
Skemen.
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 It's hard for me to say, like, in isolation. I'll try and use it. Yeah.
Anyway, I remember reading about it. And just this morning, I've gotten to eat a bowl of dipping noodles.
Yeah. So where do we even begin? So I went on kind of a journey yesterday because I, like, asked on Twitter, like, is this only a Japanese thing? Let's start by defining what we're talking about.
Okay.
All right. So this is going to be one of those episodes where I talk a lot and you should interrupt me a lot because otherwise it's going to be real dense.
Okay.
Dipping noodles is a way of serving noodles and broth or sauce where the noodles are served separately. And it is a dish that really focuses on the noodles and the noodle texture. And you pick up some noodles with your chopsticks, you dip them into the sauce or broth, and then slurp them up.
So I'm guessing that the sauce or broth is going to be more concentrated and flavorful than it would be in, like, a soup context.
Yes, exactly.
And I'm also wondering if this is something that is often eaten, like, in the warmer months of the year, because the noodles, at least as you served them today, were cold.
Yeah, I mean, it's served year round in Japan, certainly, but, like, I do think of it as, like, something that is especially refreshing, especially like an udon or soba preparation. It's especially refreshing when it's hot out because, like, the noodles are usually cold. The dipping sauce is sometimes cold as well, especially when soba is involved.
Okay.
I made a hot dipping sauce today, but it can go either way.
Okay. Wait, are these a Japanese thing primarily? Do they show up in other cultural traditions?
Okay. So what I found was, like, I like racked my brain, which makes like a real satisfying sound, like a kind of sound. And I was like, can I think of, like, a dish where noodles are served this way outside of Japan? I couldn't, so I asked. Basically, what people on the internet came up with was the one example that really seems to fit where it's, like, focused on the noodles and you're really dipping them into an intense, flavorful broth or sauce is Bun Cha Hanoi, which is bun cha, served in northern Vietnam, where the noodles are served like cold in a bowl, and you pick them up and dip them into a sauce that usually has pork in it, and there's probably lettuce leaves involved also.
Okay. So that's really good.
Like,
I
people suggested. So one person, we have a listener who lives in Istanbul and writes about Istanbul Eats, and said that, like, if you go to a Uyghur restaurant in Istanbul, you can get noodles as a side dish to go with various dishes, which seemed like when noodles are like interchangeable with other things as a side dish, it maybe doesn't quite fit for me, but it's certainly close.
I don't know. I mean, I guess it depends on whether the side noodles are being dipped.
Yeah.
And because then, inherently dipping noodles, there has to be a dipping motion.
There has to be a dipping. Yeah. Like
in the eating of them.
If your arm isn't going up and down a lot.
Yeah. Then you should definitely be sure to stretch before you eat your dipping noodles.
And one wise guy named at Jake Some Noise on Twitter said,
Local Seattle-based chef.
Oh, okay, great. Mm-hmm. When bad American Italian restaurants just put the sauce on top of the pasta instead of finishing it in the sauce. So.
Oh, yeah, that's a bad example of dipping noodles. I mean, that's an example of bad dipping noodles.
Yeah, exactly. So I think we can conclude that, like, this type of dish has gotten, like, its greatest expression and diversity in Japan.
Okay. Well, so hold on. When did you
Unless
first have it?
Unless there's something that I don't know about yet, in which, please get in touch.
We need to do memory lane.
Let's do memory lane. Do you want to start?
Yes, I will start. The first time I had dipping noodles was here at your table this morning.
Okay, that's what I thought.
It is a Monday morning. Right now it's 9:52 a.m. I think I was probably eating them at, like, 9:32. Two, maybe. And they were delicious. I think that there was some sort of little pork pieces.
Yep.
And what seemed like scallions, or was it nagi? No, scallions.
Scallions and onions.
Okay. Dashi? Was there dashi?
There was dashi
going on? Soy sauce?
Yep.
Yep. And you used udon, which had a delightful chew to it.
Yeah, I love cold udon.
It looked like you used the, is it Shirakiku or?
Yeah, I think it was Shirakiku brand.
Yes, that's the brand I usually use too.
When you get frozen udon, which I think is the best way to buy it for cooking at home, it comes in a very satisfyingly, like, perfectly rectangular block of pressed noodles that then immediately comes apart when you put it in boiling water.
It's delightful.
It's great.
Okay, so that was the first time I had dipping noodles, and they were delicious.
Oh, good. I'm glad you enjoyed them. That was a recipe, like, I say I developed the recipe. Like, I think I probably started with a just one cookbook recipe and tweaked it a little bit. Mm-hmm. But I will share my recipe in the show notes. It's super easy to make. Like, I started cooking when you got here at like 9:05, and it was ready by 9:30.
I think my entire family would love this. I'm very glad to know about it.
Yeah, like, you can. Yeah, it's something you can whip up anytime. Like, I do like get the special sliced pork from Owajimaya, but if I didn't have it, it would be fine.
Tell me about your first time having dip, or your memory lane.
So I think the first time I had dipping noodles was at Lark Restaurant, which is not a Japanese restaurant, but friend of the show, Sonoko Sakai, author of Japanese Home Cooking and kind of a soba ambassador, was doing a special soba dinner at Lark, and it was like soba served like a bunch of different ways. And I went with then 3-year-old, like 6-year-old of the show, December, who mostly ate like crackers and the chocolate madeleines, but tasted all of the soba dishes. And there was like a cold soba with uni. I think there was like a soba gaki dish, which is like soba dough that's been cooked without being made into noodles. So it's really, you're just focusing on like the chewy texture. But then there was also a dipping noodle. I'm sure I made like a sauce all over my shirt, which I still do every time I eat dipping noodles. And I was like, this is interesting. And then I don't think I had it again until maybe the second or third time I went to Japan.
Okay.
I think like it's something you can get at Hanamaru Udon for sure. It's a way of serving udon or soba especially, but then also ramen, which we'll get to in a minute. That's what tsukemen is.
Okay, so Matthew, where to begin? Should we go into tsukemen?
Let's talk about a little history, because tsukemen is something that came along more recently. Like, people have been eating udon and soba like this for a long time. So as far as I can tell, like, I did my best like Japanese language Googling and kind of got stuck. But here's what I can say with some level of confidence. This style of serving noodles started with soba And soba started to be eaten in Japan during the Edo period, aka the Tokugawa shogunate, so from like 1600 to 1850-ish. I couldn't figure out for sure like what soba shops were like back then and how they differed from today, but I am going to speculate that they are not that different than they were several hundred years ago, except that meat probably wouldn't have been on the menu back then.
Okay.
But there isn't a lot of meat at a soba place typically anyway. There might be like one like meat dish, mm-hmm. Or sometimes duck. By the time of the Meiji Restoration in the mid-19th century, soba shops would have been serving soba with hot broth in soup or as dipping noodles with a cold, flavorful dipping sauce.
Okay.
And that would be called probably zaru soba, which the zaru is like the bamboo mesh strainer. And so you get like a pile of noodles sitting on this bamboo tray. You then dip them in the sauce and eat them.
Okay. It's wild to think, okay, so that would have been like the mid-1800s,
yeah.
Right? I mean, I wonder like what the equivalent of like a soba shop would have been in the U.S. at that time. Like that sort
maybe
of...
like a jack-in-the-box?
like that sort of category of like casual but carefully made food.
I don't know. Like what...
Would that have been like fish and chips?
I'm sure I've read a book about like the restaurant history of America, but like I have no, like when I think of like the mid 19th century, like I think of like a shack where like people are like cooking on a wood stove.
I just think of like the Civil War.
Yeah, sure.
I don't think about food.
Yeah, but I think people did eat food in America.
I think they probably did too.
During that century.
Yeah. Anyway. Okay. Well, maybe we have a listener who will let us know if there was like sort of, I don't know, an equivalent in terms of like, what am I looking for? Like an easy to stop into shop where you could get.
Yeah, you're right. There must have been.
Right?
Like to get some sort of restorative broth.
Yeah. To get a restorative broth.
Like. Yeah, we should do an episode just called restorative broths.
You know what? I think that is synonymous with bone broth.
Yeah,
and I think
right.
that pretty much every wellness blogger has beaten us to that.
Matt. Bone broth.
Bone broth.
Okay. The sauce for like a dipping soba or udon is made with dashi, sake, mirin, and soy sauce, and usually garnished with scallions. And you can buy this sauce commercially, like the sauce, the same base sauce that I just made. You can buy in a bottle at a Wajimaya or any grocery store in Japan. It's called mensuyu, which just means like noodle dip.
Okay.
And the bottled versions are pretty good because like, you know, there's no reason those ingredients would like go bad. And sometimes it comes in a little carton, which is very satisfying. Mm-hmm. And like last year I was ordering some comics from Japan and I discovered a series called Mensuyu Hitori Meshi, which means like cooking for yourself with mensuyu. And it is about like these two women who work in this office and they're sort of like friends, sort of like frenemies. One of them uses bottled mensuyu in every dish that she makes. And the other one thinks this is just like unacceptable. You know, no human should eat this way with processed foods. And like, so you obviously the woman who uses the mensuyu is the hero and like teaches the other woman how to chill out.
Oh, this is fantastic. I love this.
Yeah. So I realized I had not thought about this. I read the first one and then I forgot, but there are several more in the series. I think I'm going to order the rest.
So Matthew, when you served dipping noodles this morning, you served the noodles on a plate and the dipping broth in a bowl. Is this how it's traditionally served?
Yeah. I mean, the plate might be a bamboo tray, but other than that, yeah.
Okay.
That's
okay.
It. When soba is served for dipping, it's usually on the bamboo mat, and it's usually topped with some shreds of nori, which is very nice. Interestingly, like I think of soba, like there is kind of a thing, like especially in Tokyo, like soba is considered like a classic Tokyo food. And so there's like a long tradition and every soba shop wants to tell you like, you know, they were established in 1811 or whatever. Udon is older than soba.
Oh, okay.
But, you know, because it comes from Western Japan, like, it's not as, like, culturally central, I think, because, like, Tokyo and Tokyo history and Tokyo stuff has long been such a focus in Japan.
Okay.
But making things with wheat goes back further than making things with buckwheat.
Okay.
But like once udon became popular throughout Japan, which I think happened in the 20th century, like then especially casual like udon and soba shops tend to like offer both, and you just choose like, you know, I'm going to get the hot broth with like some fried tofu, and I'll go udon on that one.
And this could be like the noodle stand that is across from Nakano Station.
Yes, exactly.
Okay.
Which does not serve dipping noodles, I don't think, because it would be too messy, but because it's like a, you know, you stand like shoulder to shoulder with other people like slurping your noodles in the morning before work.
I wish we could go there now.
Someday.
Okay. So what about, so the specific name for like dipping noodles with soba would be zaru soba.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Is there a specific name for udon?
It's zaru udon.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So what about, you mentioned ramen noodles.
Yeah. Okay. So this is one of those dishes that like everybody seems to agree on like the moment of its creation, like within a range of a few years. And like, whenever I hear that, like, I get skeptical, like, you know, that usually there isn't just like one genius who invented a dish that that everybody loves. But let's go with the story and like see who pushes back on it. So there was a chef named Kazuo Yamagishi, possibly in 1955 or possibly in 1961. He was first working at a restaurant called Nakano Taishoken, which is south of Nakano Station.
Okay.
So very near where we've stayed in Tokyo.
Okay.
He then, like, for the rest of most of his career, worked at the Higashi Ikebukuro branch of the same restaurant.
Okay.
So, like,
different neighborhood.
A couple miles away, but still in western Tokyo. And he was inspired by zaru soba to like use like leftover ingredients from his ramen shop, maybe first as staff meal, according to some stories, maybe he then put it on the menu to like make a dipping noodle, but using, you know, ramen instead of soba or udon. And ramen, like the difference is like it is a wheat noodle like udon, but it's thinner and has like a much chewier, snappier texture because it's made with an alkaline salt.
Okay. Okay. But this is like kind of a recently popular thing, right?
Yeah.
This is not like an old...
Right. So it goes back to the 60s or maybe 50s, but then like exploded in popularity in the 2000s.
Okay.
Like,
wow.
Before that, like my impression is before that, you would not say to your friends, like, let's go get Tsukemen. Whereas, like, that would be an incredibly normal thing to say today. Because your friends would be like, what? Like, they only serve that at, like, four places, and I've never heard of it.
What does that word mean? I mean, like, did that word exist before there were ramen dipping noodles?
That is a really good question. So, tsukeru is to dip, and men is noodles. So, it's just dip noodles. But that word was not, as far as I know, used as a generic term for, like, dipping soba or udon.
Okay.
I don't know.
Okay.
At the time it got popular, then, of course, people started making different styles. I think probably the most popular, so the one that Yamagishi was making was really based on like a shoyu ramen, so like maybe the dip was like a little thicker than a shoyu ramen, but like, you know, recognizably like soy sauce forward and not like super thick.
Okay.
Then what became popular was a thick style of tsukemen made with like a tonkotsu, like a pork broth, or sometimes a chicken broth, sometimes with fish ingredients also, and cooked down until it is thick.
I mean, would this be like peanut sauce thick?
Not quite, but verging in that direction.
Wow, that must be so flavorful.
Yeah, so like I've had this at a few different places. There's one in Nakano that I really like that the name may jump into my head. There's a really popular chain called Rokurinsha there, and then there's a standalone place in Shinjuku that I've been to several times called Funji, which means like the wandering samurai. And they, like, in my opinion, really like perfected this thick style.
What do they do?
Okay, so it is a chicken-based soup that has been like cooked down, and then like they put some like chunks of pork in there. You can get like a soft-boiled egg optionally, and then they do this cute thing, which I don't think they originated, but you can see it at other places. But they put a square of nori and then some powdered fish flakes just floating on there.
Okay.
And which looks really cool. And then you mix it all together so that adds even like more umami. And then you get these really thick ramen noodles. And you can choose.
Like how thick? Like compared to.
Not as thick as the udon we just had. So maybe like halfway between like a typical ramen noodle and the udon we just had. So like, I don't know, like maybe a quarter inch to a third of an inch maybe.
A third of an inch? No way, dude. You mean like an eighth of an inch?
No.
A third of an inch is thicker than the udon we just had.
Okay, you're right. So maybe like a scant quarter of an inch. There's okay. Some thick noodles.
Wow. I can't even imagine that.
Like, I'm probably exaggerating the thickness as I do with a lot of things. But
and are they? You know how ramen noodles generally have like a kinky texture to them?
Yeah.
Are they kinky?
They're not kinky. I mean, you can get skimen with kinky, which I think is called chijiri.
Okay.
But the ones at Fungi are not. And typically when they're really thick, they're not kinky.
Okay.
So then you get these noodles cold. The broth is hot.
Okay.
And it comes in like a dipping cup. You pick up the, and you can choose like what quantity of noodles you want. And the price does not change because you get the same amount of dip, but like maybe, but it's more than enough for like a medium serving of noodles.
Okay.
And we'll get to that in a second.
Okay.
But you can like choose like omori, which is like the big ass serving if you're really hungry because you're a college student, or you can get like a small one. I usually get the regular, and you pick up these cold noodles, which have just a wonderful chewy texture, and you dip them in the hot dipping sauce. And like at the beginning, you're enjoying like the contrast between the hot dip and the cold noodles. And then as you keep dipping, the sauce, of course, cools down pretty quickly. And so like, you know, some people I've heard like complain, like now I've got this lukewarm sauce. I think it's great. I love like the whole journey.
So when you finished, you still have sauce, or like have you like cleaned out the bowl of sauce?
You have not cleaned out the bowl of sauce. And then there is sitting on the bar, there is what's called wari soup, which means like dilution soup.
Sounds like you're saying watery soup.
Yeah, well, that's what it is. Like oh, okay. It's a very, very light dashi that you just pour, and it's hot. It's in like a kind of thermos pitcher, and you pour it into your leftover dip, which would be too intense to like slurp directly.
Uh-huh.
So you dilute it, and then you can drink it like a still very hearty broth.
This is brilliant.
Yeah, it is so good.
Wow.
That is not something I would try making at home. I just like dream of going back to Fungi and getting some. This episode is brought to you by Town Place Suites by Marriott.
Whether you're traveling for work or just enjoying a relaxing week away, Town Place Suites by Marriott has all the comforts of home.
Yeah, and if you're a Spilled Milk listener, we bet that sometimes you want to cook when you travel, and Town Place Suites by Marriott has a Weber grill on the patio. They've got a microwave, dishwasher, stovetop, full-size refrigerator. You are good to go.
In other words, Town Place Suites by Marriott has all the amenities you need to feel at home during your stay.
Find the comforts of home at Town Place Suites. Go there with Marriott Bonvoy. This episode is brought to you by Masterclass.
Matthew, this weekend, I took a class from somebody who I bet you admire as much as I do.
Okay, let me see it. Let me see if I can guess who that is. Denzel Washington.
No, so close, though.
Okay.
Margaret Atwood.
Okay, yeah, very similar.
Yes. So Margaret Atwood, she has a series of 23 classes on Masterclass.
23 classes.
23 classes. And I only had time, honestly, to watch two of them. But one of the ones that I watched was about how she chose to write The Handmaid's Tale in first person, where she wrote Alias Grace from multiple points of view.
Wow.
And so it was so interesting to listen to her talk about like the feeling that she wanted the book to have and why a story should be told from this perspective or that one. Anyway, even though I'm a writer and I teach writing, I think this stuff would be fascinating even to people who just read the book. It was so great.
Yeah, I mean, Masterclass is for you if you're like me, a bit of a prima donna, and you're like, I want to learn something, but I only want to learn from the best.
Mm-hmm.
You go to Masterclass. You can, learn to think like a boss with Martha Stewart. You can learn to shoot three-pointers with Steph Curry. Like, if you imagine the person who's best at the thing you want to learn, they are probably already on Masterclass teaching how to do it.
That is accurate. And plus, every new membership comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee. So, like, zero risk here. If you are a lifelong learner, and we certainly hope you are,
If you're a lifelong learner, why are you listening to this show? Instead, head over to MasterClass for an additional 15% off an annual membership at masterclass.com/spilledmilk15.
Get 15% off right now at masterclass.com/spilledmilk15.
That's masterclass.com/spilledmilk15.
So, Matthew, do you make, well, obviously you make this at home. You just made some for
yes.
me. Do you pretty much always make the version that you made this morning?
Pretty much, yeah, because I really like it.
So you mentioned you don't always have the particular pork that you used this morning. What was the pork you used?
So it's like thin sliced pork belly for a hot pot that's unseasoned. Like, you could use bacon. You'd probably want to like scale back on the soy sauce a little bit so it doesn't get too salty.
Wait, hold on. You get that just at like QFC?
Oh, Wajibaya.
Oh, I was going to say, like, I was like, I cannot imagine going up to the butcher's counter at QFC and being like, I need thin sliced pork belly for hot pot. That would not, I just can't.
Now I want to try it and see what happens. They do, no, I don't think they would be able to slice it that thin. They do sell fresh pork belly at QFC.
But when you go to Uwajimaya, they've got pork belly and you say you want it thin sliced for hot pot.
It's already packaged thin sliced. They have a section of hot pot oriented meats that are thin sliced. Usually, I think they freeze them and, like, you know, shave them thin.
Okay.
So it's really thin. I cut it up into bites and just saute it.
Okay.
And then toss in the onions and scallions and brown those a little bit, and then throw in the soup base, which I have made like while this other stuff is cooking, just from dashi powder, water, soy sauce, mirin, and sugar.
Okay.
And
it's so good.
Yeah. And then, like, the whole thing comes together in less than half an hour, and it is incredibly good.
I also noticed that while the dipping sauce was flavorful enough to coat and season the noodles, it was not too flavorful for me to at least drink most of it when it was
done. Yeah, absolutely. This is not like a thick Skemen style sauce. This is one that's you can slurp.
Okay.
If you want to make this like the best, you can make it with udon or soba. I will include the recipe in the show notes in your podcast player. The best way to buy udon and soba for cooking at home is frozen.
Mm-hmm.
Like that is going to get you the best texture. But if you can't get that and you can get dried udon, that'll work great.
What about the refrigerated stuff?
The refrigerated kind will work fine. Like, I find that one is often like trending on the mushy side.
Mm, okay.
But you know what? It's still going to be good. You know, if you have some like other non-Japanese noodles, it'll still be fine.
I have a question for you about boiling udon. So, you know, as I mentioned, I buy the same package that you buy. And so I bring the water to a boil. Drop, let's say, just one package in, mm-hmm. let's say. And at
do
least
you take the plastic off first?
Do you take the plastic off? Yeah, that would be step one. So like you, I have an electric stove, only I think my stove is even shittier than yours.
Okay.
Yours is a five burner?
Four burner.
Where
would the fifth burner be?
Maybe in the middle.
Maybe there would be a fifth burner in the middle.
Okay. I have a four burner as well. Mine has one fully functional burner, one that only works on medium, high, or lower, but never gets as hot as the first one. Then I have a second, like, smaller one that works.
I feel like
this
is the beginning
normally.
Of a word problem.
Anyway, I basically have two functional burners, one that is big and one that's small.
Okay.
But here's the thing. Even though I feel like it works just fine, totally fine.
Mm-hmm.
No, it's fine. It takes a long time for the water to come back to a boil after I drop in this block of frozen noodles.
Oh, that's fine.
And so I never know when to start the timer because you don't want to cook udon very long.
I don't even think you need to use a timer. I think it's done once it's fully unraveled.
That's very fast.
Oh, yeah. No, I think.
But like, have you ever noticed that sometimes the middle is still like a little more opaque white?
Here's what I would do. I think we might have a kitchen trick here. Like that we should send into Cook's Illustrated magazine so they can do a little hand, like, pencil sketch of it.
A little hand sketch.
Take it. Do you have like a pasta server, like with fingers coming out of it?
No.
Okay.
The closest thing I have is a spider.
Okay. Take something pokey, like a pair of like cooking chopsticks.
Okay.
Once you throw into the pot, start poking it and breaking it up.
Okay.
Like, and just keep doing that until it's fully broken up and the water seems at least hot. And then it'll be done.
What if I can still see at the center of the noodle kind of an opaque little bit?
Then cook it a little longer.
Okay.
But it's not, but it's like it's fully cooked It's fully cooked and then frozen. So it's not, there shouldn't be like a like an al dente pasta center in there. Like as, if it's heated through, it's done.
Okay. Yeah, you're right. You're right. What I'm probably seeing is a little part of it that's still not heated through.
Yeah. So definitely, it definitely is worth your time to like break it up. Like,
oh my God, sure, I'm really glad we talked about this.
Yeah. And like as you're doing it, say, break it up, break it
break
up.
Break it up. Hey, break it up, guys.
Break it up. Like, have you ever like gotten in between two kids fighting and like held out one arm in each direction, like holding them back?
No.
Me neither, but I want to so bad. I would get punched so much.
You know, it occurs to me I need a pair of cooking chopsticks.
Okay.
Yeah.
I don't actually use mine that often, but if I find some in my house, I'll give them to you.
Oh, man. I think I would definitely use them. Because I don't really
want
of those pasta things that you were describing.
Yeah,
I don't want that.
Okay. What's wrong with my pasta thing?
I don't know why I would use it. I don't want it.
I mean, you would use it to break up an udon fight.
But that's all I would use it for. I use my tongs for
other... You can use tongs to break up an udon?
I could use tongs to break up an udon fight. But I want cooking chopsticks.
Okay. Yeah. I'm glad you said that, because when you said that, my thought process was, oh, I could get you some for Christmas, which is still coming up at the time we're recording this. Mm-hmm. It's
over. The
goose
is getting
fat. You blew
fat.
It by the time you're listening to this. The goose is getting fat. And that reminded me that I have a present for you that's in the fridge that I'll give to you after this
okay.
episode.
Okay.
Okay.
I think we're done.
Yeah, I think we're done. So, so for like recipe ideas, definitely go to Just One Cookbook, but I will also include my recipe in the show notes. We'll link to Sonoko Sakai's book and website. Like, it's not specifically dipping noodle related, but she certainly makes great dipping noodles with her homemade soba.
Mm-hmm.
And her book is great. And now let's move on to segments.
Oh, man. We've got spilled mail today from listener Colton, and this one is directed to me.
Do you want to read it?
No, you read
okay.
it.
Listener Colton writes, I tried one of Molly's old standby recipes yesterday, cacio e pepe. It was delicious, and the lunch leftovers today were just as good. But I have one question. How does Molly get the fossilized cheese out of this glass bowl afterwards? It was like a practical joke I played on myself. I haven't scrubbed a dish that hard in years, and I had to throw the sponge away afterwards.
Oh, listener Colton, I absolutely know this fossilized cheese problem. One thing I want to say is the recipe that you've used, which is on my old blog, Orangette, is ancient. I think I got it out of Gourmet magazine. Like,
yeah,
I remember making it in the apartment I lived in from 2002 to 2006.
Like, okay, yeah.
Okay. I do not use that recipe anymore. I don't think it is the best one. I'm glad that you liked it. However, it is very difficult to clean fossilized cheese out of a bowl.
Yeah.
I don't think that's the best way to go. The recipe I use now is from the cookbook Repertoire by Jessica Badalana. I think it's fantastic. It results in fossilized cheese in a skillet or saute pan.
Is that better?
Okay, so what is better about it is that, so assuming that you're not using a nonstick pan.
Right.
You could use
Well, if you're using a nonstick pan, you probably wouldn't have this problem.
Maybe. But you can use a bench scraper. So,
smart.
I have like a stainless, like 12-inch saute pan. And what I do is after we have served the cacio e pepe, I put a little bit of just a small amount of like hot water, like just water out of the kettle in the bottom of the skillet and let it sit there like while we're eating dinner. And then I pour the water off. The cheese stays behind, believe me. And then I take just my bench scraper and scrape all the cheese out and scrape it directly into the compost.
This episode is rife with kitchen tips.
So I even have just like one of those metal bench scrapers. I don't even have one of the like plastic dough scrapers that you can use in a bowl. I imagine that the plastic dough scraper would be a bit more friendly on a variety of surfaces. But anyway, basically the idea is you want to soften up the cheese with a little bit of hot water, pour off that hot water, and then scrape out that gooey cheese and then wash the
okay, this is vessel. This is really helpful. I wish I had asked this question, but I get the benefit. Thank you, listener Colton, because there are a couple of pasta recipes that are like my favorites. Not that I dislike your cacio e pepe recipe, but like I make what we call pasta Bible pasta, which is pasta with like scallions and Parmigiano Reggiano and lots of butter and parsley. Mm-hmm. And an egg yolk, which makes it extra sticky.
Oh, yes.
I love that. I love Salerno style spaghetti. Both of those make a cheesy crust onto the pot to the extent that after dinner I'm like, okay, this is my new job now. Mm-hmm. Is like for the rest of my career, I'm just going to be trying to get the cheese off of this pot. So I've never bench scraped it or dough scraped it.
Use your best judgment when it comes to the surface of the pot and which tool you're going to use. But yeah, I mean, I use a stainless bench scraper on a stainless pot.
Does that make a horrifying noise?
No, it actually doesn't. It actually doesn't. There inevitably are like little corners that you can't get into. Mm-hmm. But the truth is you've gotten enough of it and what's left behind is still quite soft.
Okay.
Because yeah, I do not like to get all that crusty cheese on the sponge.
Oh, and that's the worst.
You do still get some crusty cheese on the sponge, but not enough that you have to throw it away.
Okay.
Yeah.
This is great.
So there's my tip for you, listener Colton. Thank you so much for writing in to ask. And yeah, try the cacio e pepe from Repertoire.
Can we tag this episode? Like, you know how sometimes we tag an episode not safe for June? Let's tag this one MAU, maybe actually useful.
Oh, maybe actually useful. Okay. Matthew, do you have a now but wow for us?
Yes, I do. My Now But Wow is a book. It's a YA book called I'll Be the One by Lila Lee. And I feel like this is the third YA book I've read recently that involves either K-pop or Japanese idols. I think we can call this a trend or a mini genre, and I approve. In this one, the main character is Star Shin, who gets onto a reality show competition to become the next K-pop star.
Yes.
So, which is super fun. So you've got like built-in conflict and tension, and she has to navigate fat phobia, family relationships, and first love along the way. I really enjoyed this book. I think it's probably my favorite of the K-pop or Japanese idol-related books that I've read recently, but I love them all.
Nice.
One of them, I did another one as a now, but wow, it was the one by, it's just not coming to me.
Okay.
But you know what? It's out there.
It's out there.
So this one, anyway, this one is I'll Be the One by Lila Lee. Highly recommend it.
Fantastic. Well, our producer, as always, is Abby Circatella.
Please rate and review us wherever you get your podcasts.
And you can also chat with other Spilled Milk listeners on our subreddit. That is at I'm not going to give the whole HTTP.
No, it's https:////
reddit.com/r/everythingspilledmilk.
All right. So, yeah. So let's read that URL again.
Sorry.
Okay, first, open a new tab in your internet browser. Could be Chrome, Firefox, maybe Brave.
Quant
is that real or did you just make it up?
No, Quant is one that I learned about from. Oh my God, what was the documentary thing about? Facebook.
Is it? Oh, is this like a privacy focused browser?
Yeah.
Okay. That's what Brave is also. I haven't tried it.
Okay. Great.
Because I love.
You love having your stuff stolen?
Yeah. Well, it's more, I'm really more about the undermining democracy part personally. That's what I care about.
Everybody loves to undermine democracy these days.
And until next time.
Thank you for listening to Spilled Milk, the show that's just going around to all the butcher's counters asking for thinly sliced pork belly for hot pots.
Yeah, I just like Pope bring something up and say, can you shave this?
I'm Molly Weisenberg.
And I'm Matthew Amster Burton.
Oh, Matthew, why did you have to mention undermining democracy at the end of the show?
We're a couple of dips and you can dip us in anything you want.
Whether you're shopping for grads, getting an early gift for dad, or just looking for a little something new or used for your shelf, you'll find it at HPB. And you'll get almost everything for an extra 20% off during the big sale at Half Price Books this Memorial Day weekend. Saturday, May 25th through Monday, May 27th, save big in-store at your local Half Price Books and at HPB.com. Offer cannot be combined with other coupons. Exclusions apply. To learn more, visit HPB.com.